Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Point Podcast. Really glad you're on board this week. My name is Todd Stiles. I'm one of the pastors at First Family Church. And today is Tuesday, July 1st, 2025, the very first day of this month. Glad you're listening. And I want to address, in this episode of the Extra Point Podcast, I want to address a conversation that I had in regards to last week's podcast. And so it's tangentially tied to some previous texts from which we preached, not directly tied to last week's text, but I felt it a matter of priority to bring this up and to bring some attention to what I feel is the weak link in the logic of the sexual immoral revolution. Now, let me give you a little bit of background so you'll know where I'm coming from. This conversation that I'm referring to, I read a wonderful conversation with one of our members just about this whole sexual immoral revolution. They were intrigued that I would call it that. Some call it, you know, the moral revolution that we've been in since the 60s. Some call it the sexual revolution. I'm much more comfortable just calling it the sexual immoral revolution, putting all that together, but not giving it the word moral because it's far from that. And so we were talking about this sexual immoral revolution, kind of an umbrella term for all that's been happening since the 60s, maybe 50s in that time frame. And they were curious about my insistence, we could call it, or my suggestion that there is room to argue with those on the other side. You could say debate. This person was saying, it seems interesting that you think you can use logic to converse with him on this subject. And of course, he's speaking about the podcast I made in which I encourage winsomeness that comes from confidence and to smile and to ask questions, to restate, to have conversations. He was curious how in the world that works when often people are so dead set in their immorality, they won't have any kind of conversation. And it seems like they have a lot of good arguments for doing what they want and for, you know, a very libertarian type of posture, sexually speaking. And so he just was curious, like, how in the world would you have a logical conversation around something like the sexual immoral revolution? How in the world would you gain any ground? And I loved the conversation because I do think there is a weak link in their argument. But ironically, it's the one they take their stand on right now. So I want to talk to you about what I think is the weak link in the sexual immoral revolution. And in a very simple sentence, the weak link in that entire framework of perverseness is the link of consent, or you could call it the culture of consent. That is what they rest on. They're convinced that when there's consent, then it's all right. Two consenting adults, you could go down the line of your level of perversion. I won't do it on this podcast, but certain groups, even down to pedophilia, they're convinced that if there's a consent, then that suddenly makes things right. But a culture of consent is illogical. Most people in the camp of the sexual immoral revolution will eventually come to a place where they will not consent to something, and they'll say, well, that's not right, even if someone does consent to it. There'll be something so perverse, something so inhumane, something so wrong and evil that even they would say, well, you can't do that. And maybe you'll fill the blank in there. And it will vary from person to person. But there is a place where even a hedonistic, sexually selfish person would say, well, you can't do that, even if they consent, or that doesn't seem to be right. And that's my point. That if you can eventually get to a place in a conversation, let's say with someone, if you can get to that place where they're willing to say, well, there is an absolute standard there, even if they were to consent, that can't be right. If you can get to that base level, so to speak, or something so rotten or evil or so low that even those who are for a culture of consent would say, well, even if people consent, you shouldn't be doing that. then it proves the point that there is an absolute standard. And so the question then is, who sets the standard? And that's the conversation that needs to happen. Because what they don't want to say is that there is an absolute standard, that someone can't set the rules for other people. So they continuously say, no, consenting adults, or this is what they said they want to do, or they feel like they're a girl, or they feel like they're a boy when they're really not biologically. So they should be able to demand this kind of surgery, or they should be able to demand these things, or men marrying men, or women marrying women, or a host of other variations. The refrain, the fundamental refrain is they're consenting. They're not, no one minds this. They're not against it. They don't feel like it's prohibited. Why can't they do what they want to do? One of their key words is rights. And it's been twisted, you know, to where now anything even close to some kind of sexual appetite is considered a right. And so they've twisted this to indicate that if there's a desire for it, if people are consenting, then it should be allowed. It's what we call a culture of consent. And it is the basic fundamental hinge point for a lot of the sexual revolution, the sexual immoral revolution. It hinges around, it revolves around this culture of consent. But I believe personally that is the exact entry point for a solid, logical conversation in which you try and say and work and converse with them and find out where is something not okay. Where would you say, even if they're consenting, we can't do this? And at that point, and that everyone has that point, by the way. Don't let them fool you. Don't let anyone fool you. Everyone's got a point in which there's a line they'll draw. So the question then becomes, so why can you draw the line there, but other folks can't draw it over here or somewhere else? It always comes back to the issue of who's ultimately in charge. Who sets the standard? And when you get to that point in the conversation where that's happening, then you'll be able to talk about who God is. And in the sexual immoral revolution, they are God. They set the standards. And as long as it's consenting adults, they say it's okay until they say it's not okay. We as Christians, as followers of Jesus, say that God is God, that the Bible is his revealed word, which sets the absolute standard in our sexual ethic, in what defines marriage, and what's allowed and not allowed. That's the framework for our sexual ethic. It's the Bible, the written revelation of God, the Creator. And so do you see that suddenly now you're arguing about who is the authority? And I believe the entry point for having that conversation and getting to the real weakest link in the sexual immoral revolution is the conversation that revolves around the culture of consent. Because no matter what they tell you, trust me, no matter what they tell you, everyone's got a line when something's not okay, even if there's mutual consent. You get to that line, you get to that conversation, and then you'll have the real conversation. As we often say, that's the question below the question, or the issue below the issue. That'll be the conversation you want to have. Why they feel like they can now draw the line and set the standard, even if people consent. And why can't you? You know, why can't Christians draw the line? Why can't God draw the line? And so this question of ultimate authority, who sets the standard? That will be the eventual question if you go down the road of cultural consent. And I think I've had multiple conversations with people who fervently, vehemently disagree with me on sexual ethics. And when we go down the road of the culture of consent conversation, it always ends up with, well, who gets to make the rules? Because they eventually will draw a line at something, and then you're now down to the issue below the issue. So a lot of words there, some examples. My point is this, and this is what was expressed in that conversation. I think the entry point for really healthy, good, potentially transforming conversations is the issue of the culture of consent, because it will not hold up an honest conversation. There are other things that won't hold up as well, but that's a especially attractive entry point. That's an especially productive topic that if you land on it and discuss it and stay focused on it and continue the conversation, I think it will breed really good results. It may not, you know, result in someone admitting like, well, you're right, this doesn't make sense. But you will definitely bring them to places where they're thinking about it. This culture of consent, it is, without a doubt, sexual suicide. That's all it leads to. And so the sexual immoral revolution rests on a concept that actually is suicidal, sexually speaking. And I think you'll begin to see that in the conversation if you go down this road, the beginning point being the whole idea of a culture of consent. That's what people are all about right now. But it doesn't hold up logically. By the way, it doesn't hold up biblically for the Christian. So if they're arguing with you as a Christian, and don't be surprised if some say to you, oh, I can be gay and be a Christian, or I can believe in adultery and be a Christian. That whole consent thing does not hold up biblically for Christians. It doesn't hold up logically for cultures, because in the end, it's just suicidal for societies. Clearly, a culture of consent is nothing more than mob rule. That's all it is. If you think it's right and someone else thinks it's right, then go ahead and engage. No one else can have a say-so. No one else should say anything. And it's a very selfish way to organize societies and civilizations. But we're seeing that play out in front of us. It's really judges right in front of our eyes, isn't it? That every man did that which was right in his own eyes. A person then finds that he's consenting to something, so it must be right. Then they find other folks who consent to that, so it must be right. And then you eventually find that the entire civilization, the society, the culture is just trajecturing towards death. And when rights is the key word in a culture, which right now that seems to be what's happening in ours, everyone's concerned about their rights. And it's been that way for decades. And we've created a list of rights that is, it's just frustratingly long, isn't it? And so this whole idea of doing what's right in your own eyes, finding those who consent with you, and then establishing those things as, you know, rights that are inherent to being human and so forth. It's a journey towards societal suicide. And if you want to talk about that with people who don't agree with you, but are willing to converse with you, I think one of the best entry points is this whole idea of a culture of consent. It's what the sexual immoral revolution rests on. And if you're looking for the weak link in that chain of thought, that's the weak link, the culture of consent. And so engage in conversations around that. It will take some practice. There'll be times you'll be frustrated, I suspect. You may experience times in which maybe you get stuck. Man, I would say stay at it. Keep practicing. Engage. Because at some point, you'll find that your skill will increase and you'll be able to have winsome, confident, and possibly, potentially, even transformative conversations with people when you begin at the entry point of the culture of consent, because it will not hold up under strenuous, logical thought. It simply won't. And that's what you're after in a winsome, confident conversation. So I want to encourage you, based on my conversation with this individual and our unified delight in how this works, the sexual immoral revolution does have a weak link, and it is the culture of consent that undergirds it and is the current foundation for a lot of what they want to do. I would have that conversation each and every day if someone wanted to, because it will not hold up to rigorous, logical thought, honest debate. It will not hold up. And that's the point in which we can then establish, well, then who does get to set the rules? Who is the authority? And in the Christian's worldview, in our framework, it's God, the author of the Bible, the creator of the universe. He's the one who sets the standard. And so we gladly submit to our creator, to God, and live according to the Bible's sexual ethic.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. to find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.